Chairperson, the act says that the chairperson and deputy chairperson are appointed in terms of the constitution.
And just to help us all stay on the same page, literally, we're now bottom page 7 of 47, that's the heading of other functions, and we go to the first point, which is the top of the next page, page 8. Now, this is too interesting. This is part of the muscle flexing and the expanding role. It is proposed that you could work on a cost recovery basis and without compromising independence and all sorts of other stuff, provide fiscal-related advisory services to all the states in the Republic and to foreign agencies. And Professor Osman will, of course, want to ask you about that. But firstly, you are saying, as far as I can see, that you want to start charging the provinces, government, and municipalities. You want to start charging them for your advice. Why? Do you want to work like the Auditor General? But, you know, what is the reason? You want to start charging them? You want to start making money? Why? Do you want to expand? Do you want to improve your independence? What is it?
I think our thinking there was, well, not necessarily to charge elected entities, but to cover us in the event where people or organizations from the public may want work from us, and we spend time on that work, and then we should look at cost recovery. And also look at situations where we are sought to advise on, you know, maybe the social come and says we want something like this and that. Because we don't have a clear mandate to do that work, then we thought if we would go in order, then we could charge the men.
Can I ask you to reconsider some of these matters? Because we don't micromanage. That's our own business. Minister of Finance has something to say about the charge. Our problem is that we look at 11 organizations. We may have to make proposals for changes and amendments, which are vital and necessary. But there are so many proposals being made before us to amend legislation, which will mean that the core elements of the recommendations may be forgotten. So can we therefore say, we don't want to micromanage you, it's up to you to work out what you want to do, our charters and all that, that's your business, you'll have to deal with that through the Minister of Finance. Because you can't impose charters. As an academic, I would say, but I think in public bodies like one nation, they charge too much to do reports on bodies. And as an academic, I would think that you have enough of budgets to meet community needs, for example, for research. But they're very good bacopelias. If bacopelias mean anything at all, you might put people first. Just watch.
Yeah, if you also allow me to say, I mean, the last point is in terms of reference of this committee. However, do invite a review of the funding model of the institutions, including funding the rights and concerns and licenses. That applies only to Uganda and other fees. So, I mean, they are within the parameters in wanting to propose such a thing, and let's just recognize that it's a subject which, in the case of Uganda, I think deserves some discussion. And they are certainly within their rights.
I think we should work. Let's only take a 4-minute break.
Just for clarification, I have the that legislation now. Let's be quite clear. Before I accuse my researchers of being not equal, the composition of the commission, this is after 1995, in terms of section 221, 1 of the constitution, the commission consists of the following women and men appointed by the president: a chairperson, a deputy person, 3 persons elected after consulting the premier, this for bylaw, 2 persons elected consulting the public, 2 other persons. Doesn't say anything at all about full time, no? And section 221 doesn't say anything about full time either. So it was the interim constitution that says you're hard. So, but why? In terms of the constitution, they're appointed. In terms of the constitution. We appoint the same. Yeah. Let's have a discussion in the meantime. 4 minutes for a break.
Well, that's another book.
This is the first time I've seen that book in the country.
So many years.
Can we sit down? I think it's absolutely vital that all constitutionally appointed bodies should be able to establish their terms of reference and the legal basis. So I withdraw the invitation that my researchers have let me down. The Constitution never rely on sort of utter data. And I think that we should correct it. But in any event, we're going to ask this question about all commissioners, how much do you rely on consultants with you? For this matter about your legal basis and authority, he's not a lawyer's man. This constitution is drafted in a very plain English. Canadian helps us to do it in plain English, as you advise. Now, let me say, break in. That does not imply that there should not be a full-time commission. It is that the basis for that has to be clarified. It may be, and the committee will think about it, there might be a case for more than two full-time commissions. That's a matter for us to discuss. So there's no inference to be drawn that there should be full-time. It's the validity of the appointments. Now, it's perfectly correct to say that if you're appointed full-time, that's a contract of employment. You're not violating the rules of the Constitution. That's a contract of employment. The minister and the president have appointed, by inference, two full-time people. But I think that the basis for that should be clarified. Now, without prejudice to what the committee may discuss, because we're looking at the composition of all the bodies, and particularly now that you want to venture out adventurously to Africa and all that, you may need more expertise on a full-time basis. And of course, the relationship with balance is going to be important. But in fact, are we coming to some kind of conclusion on internal governance?
Yeah, I think so, because much of what follows, and there are a few concrete ones you should deal with, but much of what follows is just a very long, and I would argue, hopefully overkilled, over-legislated provisions, which are not appropriate for us to deal with here, and I don't think ever we should stand in the way they are. But if you wish, shall we just consider some of the concrete things? The very next one relates again to the issue on which you appear to have a view, and that is the international work. And therefore, I'm not sure it's necessary to share, or perhaps we should give the opportunity for further argumentation. I think I just wish to say, now, everything in South Africa, from the army, from the SANDF, through to the Human Rights Commission, through to you name it, everybody is very actively involved, as far as I can see, on our continent and beyond. It's one of the it's one of the great benefits, perhaps, of what we've achieved to the country. And therefore, I think it's quite a difficult question. We do wish to contribute to Africa as part of the...
We're not deciding their policy. We're just listening to what basis they have. We look at, for example, how much, what demands are domestically before they can go out.
Do we not want to, because you seem to have taken a view on it, but do we need more arguments from their side why they want to work abroad? or not?
But they're going to make a supplementary submission. Mm-hmm. And the board, the commission is going to make a matter.
Well, let's let the commission there if you want to make a detailed case. The next question I want to ask is, surely your act already covers this. You want to appoint advisory and other structures outside the administration for specialized services, but surely that is covered already by law, section 4.1b, obtain the services of any person, including any organization or institution, to perform any specific act or function. Surely you're already covered. Yeah, the Deputy Commissioner agrees. The next point. Now, these are all amendments you want to your act. You want ancillary powers, and perhaps you should just address us on this if you in fact do want it. Ancillary powers necessary to achieve primary objects. And what is new? What I want to know, what is new here? Is it just the word abroad, once again? Or is it the word educate? What is it? What's new in this list of ancillary powers you want? So you already researched, monitor, investigate, advise, report.
Yes, is that all these are aspirational. This is what you like done. What we want to know is what you're doing about institutional governance. A statesman. For example, what are the powers of the deputy chief executive? And to what extent, if the powers are not drawn out, what is the nature of the institutional arrangements then? So have there been any protocols? Because I think everybody loves this word protocol. Have there been any discussion when the present chief deputy executive retires in December? What will the new deputy chief executive do? Because there has to be one. The law says so. The law says so. And our report may not be implemented by then. So what is the new deputy chief executive going to do after the 7th?
Yeah, I really think we are in the process. Maybe some of our redundant statements there, some maybe were wrong in putting them in the document that came here, because it was also just to clarify the thinking of us who are new to the institution. Just to have flags as we walk to see that we have covered this, we have covered that. But given the shortness of time to consolidate the document, maybe we have included things we shouldn't have.
The new chief of Sumatra, and we look at this issue, when vacancies arise, the process should begin 6 months before now. And that's going to be very important, at least 6 months. What will the new deputy chief of the new, I know you're on holiday, December 7th, what will you do on January 15th, Washington?
Yeah, I think that is actually part of our strategy review. This morning we were even discussing that together. So you know, in a way really we are already thinking, but we just are not in a position to report.
I mean, we said there are 13. You mean in existence for 13 years. You can't point to me a document or a statement or a minute of the commissioners which delineates the powers of the deputy chief executive. Yes. No, I'm putting that first here. Yeah.
In fact, there is a minute of, in 1996, the commission did meet and address this issue, and the commission took a decision to delineate the tasks and functions of the chair and the deputy chair, and the other commissioners were threatening, and I don't know. At this meeting, it was decided that the chair would take the responsibilities of the corporate governance of the commission and be responsible as accounting officer, etc. And the deputy chair will have the responsibility of managing the recommendations, the research program of the commission. In addition, later on, there was an amendment that the deputy chair will also then be responsible for the relationships with the parliamentary office and the legislature. So I think there was a decision then. There are commission decisions.
Thank you very much. So we did a copy of that. Would a committee would like that one day? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And should that be in the report? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the problem, just to choose a little bit, is that you're the second person who's just taken office last year. So the question I'll ask you here, because it will affect our work, is continuity and renewal.
how many of your commissioners have been around for 4 or 5 years? And how many are new? Your manager, for example, how long has the manager been? The manager in a senior position. So it's not fair, but I mean, what we want is a recollection of institutional memory. I mean, that's how it's going to work. What happened in 15 years, 14 years? So how many of your commissioners have been around for 3 or 4 years, and how many have been only around for a year or two?
Chair, the current executive manager took up his post at the beginning of in April 2005, and we had an executive manager in the past.
No, the question is commissioner.
Currently, the commissioners that have been associated with the commission, we have Professor Mark, Tanya Jam, and Maluleke Mshinga, who's been with us for 2 years. So I think there is, amongst the commissioners, we have at least, the current group have been with the commission for at least 3 years now. Two and a half to 3 years.
We'll look at that carefully, because we've now established that part time. So the issue of institutional governance, again, what happens about the use of consultants? To what extent the line of consultants supplement capacity? You say in paragraph 14, one of the reasons why they want to abolish the refugees that are was the small integrated size of the full-time staff. Then you write at least three major reports every year, isn't it? Three major reports. What is the role of the staff? Because you have researchers, senior researchers, managers, academics on the committee. What is your reliance on consultants? We ask of everybody, by the way. And can you give us in monetary terms what consultants cost you?
Thank you, Chair. I think the Act, FFT Act is clear that we can commission research. So we do commission research. The nature of public finance intergovernmental fiscal relations is such that you cannot employ people specifically for a generic role in any given context, because you may have something to do with specifically local government tax, or you may have something to do specifically with some other issues around policy instruments and institutional arrangements and legal issues. So it would be difficult to hire somebody who will introduce legislation into the system. So what we do then is we have a core of program managers in kind of generic areas like fiscal policy, public finance, macroeconomics, and intergovernmental fiscal relations and institutions and so on. And they then can commission. They have then the power to commission research on specific areas of recommendations that may be required at any given time. And I think we do have a very strict process in commissioning research. We try to focus as much as we can on the institutions within South Africa, within academic institutions if we can, to a large degree. But because South Africa is new in the field of intergovernmental fiscal relations, we sometimes draw on international expertise, and especially from international academic institutions in the past.
You
can
quantify.
Chair, there are in the public service system, there are sort of rates that we can use, and we try to keep within those rates. I know we don't, any of my other program managers in finance can assist me. I don't think we go beyond, say, $500 a day.
No, there was a report published by the Department of Government and the Department of Public Service about some departments spend 10-15% of the budget on consultants. Would they say in broad terms, or specifically, how much money out of the 12 million? Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm also provided a table of financial commission.
if you look on the annual report 2005 on page 34. And then you see another research court, Wells Commission court, soil issue those court. You could look at last year, it was 1.9 million out of the budget of 19 million. The previous year, it was 1.4 million out of the budget of 16 million. It's included on those research costs. We call them research costs instead of commission costs, where we include the core business cost for consultation.
All members of the
committee
don't have it.
Yes. Those research costs are the consultation costs that the teacher has spoken about, which we included under those research costs. And then we've got professional services where we use for our legal services and other typical like the church consultations and so on. We put those under the operational cost. But for the core business function, we normally disclose them separately from the operational cost.
But in fact, legal fees are
The research cost is 1.9 million.
I think I can ask the executive manager to give us a report. But currently, we have one vacancy for the program manager for the intergovernmental fiscal relations portfolio, and we have a researcher, a vacancy for the senior researcher, and then for the corporate side, we are putting in a vacancy for the data and information manager. In fact, that person will be joining us on the 1st of March. But I think we have some few vacancies. Mashumi, you want to?
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 45 of the responses, we have human resources information. And there we set out the positions that we have within the organization and the vacancies that we have. The vacancies at this special point in time are the Research and Recommendations Program Director, the IDFR Performance Program Manager who recently resigned, and the Manager of Government Information Units. The Government Information Unit Manager will be starting on the 1st of March, and advertisement is out for the IDFR Performance Manager. And the RFP director position is going to be advertised this month.
So the problem was that you think he's long, several of them. The problem is about the training staff. Again, we ask everybody that.
I think because the SSC is a very specialized body, we have had a problem with high turnover of staff, especially at the professional level, but the problem is many of them move to National Treasury or they go to government and so on because the skills are developed within the intergovernmental fiscal relations. But I think over the past few years, we've tend to stem the tide, the flow of professional people from the SSC in terms of those areas. But I think sometimes it's very difficult to do this because we have not yet establish the mechanisms of whether the FSC remuneration structure is within the public sector or within the whichever sector it is. So that has been a serious problem. I think that is what we need to do.
Should there be kind of clarity on professional staff as to the salaries of this sector or that sector? I mean, the principle you're working is that they're public sector employments, right? And they also have a revenue service, and the law allows them, you know, it's separate. But is there not a need here to clarify this with the Treasury or to the public, for the committees?
At this stage we're using public sector scales for employees, but the discussions are underway to clarify them.
We'll come to the market with Francis. There's a demand here that people should be paid, commissioners should be paid market related salaries. We'll come to that in a moment. I'm feeling advanced notices will raise that market related. This month, in our next section now.
Yeah, that's where we were. I think I've been to the session before on the fifth for including the need to work with our PFA and president, for the assistance of people with the whole section of the company, responsibility, which is a proposal of executive knowledge.
The chair and the CEO must report to Parliament, and I would think with respect not necessary, you already have to, it goes without saying that you must cover these categories. I would think the CEO should report as required by the MSA. On information and data, I would like to ask the next question. And simultaneously refer over the page to something you call action plan. Now, you suggest that each year the Financial Fiscal Commission must request the relevant organs of state. Now, that means the government at all levels, obviously, and yourself, to provide you with information and data on matters pertaining to the equitable division of revenue. And you refer to Section 214 of the Constitution. You want their input on every issue from subsection A of subsection 2. Everything from A through to J. Now, you are surely not saying that the finance minister on the national level must justify to you the national interest, the provision that has to be made in respect of national debt, the needs and interests of national government. Or are you? Are you saying he must in fact justify it from the assumption you might have some other finance minister? Perhaps you really mean D through J. And you want them to report on the measures that they have taken towards the realization of what you call the ideals in the same constitutional section, which involves the developmental needs of the provinces, the basic services they must supply, the economic disparities within and amongst provinces, your horizontal fiscal imbalance. Now, you must argue it. Over the page, if you agree with it, over the page, under action plan, you want every year, every organ of state to supply you with what departments do anyway. A plan of action with outcomes, appropriate indicators, time frames for implementation. So let's say fair enough what departments do anyway. Then you want particulars about the extent to which recommendations of the Commission have been accepted. Is this the same point you had reached earlier when you said rather than being accused of snooping and policing, you want this stuff formalized, you want to receive it? Is that the same point? And how does it relate please to this other information and data proposal? The information and data proposal I don't really get.
On the first question, Section 220 of the Constitution indicates that the Commission must take account of Section 214 A to J in making its recommendations. So this is why we require, in order to take Section 214 A to J into account in making our recommendations, it's difficult to make those without having the information necessary. So that pertains to that, and thus far we have not had any problems with that, with the ministry and with the other departments and with the provinces. So that has been very good. In terms of the data and information, sometimes the data, for example, if we want to develop a formula or we want to comment on the way the allocations are made, we need very important data on some of that budget data, etc., and the actuals of what's been spent to do our budget analysis issues. In terms of the IGFR Act, after the minister has presented his budget, we need to make a comment on the extent to which he has taken our recommendations into account. So we would require the information from the minister or from government in general, the extent to which they have taken on board some of the things we've said. Some of the other points there, I think, are not, we as a commission have not discussed those issues yet, and we'll probably have to discuss them.
No, there's a problem. 14 is about 12 spaces. Can we say, in fact, there's something as limitation of liability? I don't know who drafted this report, but we didn't ask for that, really. So at least with this last permission of the committee, would pass 14. We'll look at this. Because if these are, they would like to do. What we want to know is what's happening now. Code of conduct. The code of conduct is unusual here. It's directions as to how the commissioners must behave. According to your document. Code of conduct is much more than simply how commissioners must behave. Code of conduct is the internal organization of the council. You see, 14 was very limited. 14 really asked you, institutional governance, what arrangements there. Now they deal in the moment of 15, that the institutional mechanism face the internal conflict of the institution. What are mechanisms for this? And the internal conflict would be the three varieties. One is which is a two full-time commissioners. How do you deal with that? Second is between among the commissioners, because this is what we are charged by Parliament to do. Among the commissioners or between the two full-time commissioners and the the third one is the chief executive and all other commissioners and the staff. This is the real problem. The separation between the commissioners and the executive staff. So how do you deal with this situation? Because you said you have a code of conduct about instructions to the commissioners, but we're looking for to do more than that, because you know, we read newspapers and we talk about, we read about internal conflicts in chapter 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, or 13 in that case maybe. So how do you deal with this?
Yeah, I think that's going to actually work in progress. I'm doing it through.
In 14 years, there must have been, I know you've been here, with tensions, but the luck has been there, the jazz been there, and there have been difficulties with the tripartite area. The three areas have been difficulties. And remember, everything I say is privileged, by the way. We're meeting as a parliamentary committee. So everything is privileged. I should have said at the beginning, by the way. Not that you're going to put your foot into it, but simply, and what you say is protected. Now, you look at this, but I mean, we have to legislate on the basis that in all institutions there are tensions. Tensions become much worse than that. They become problems. And some, which we're meeting in the next few weeks, become very public. Now, of course, if you're accountable to Parliament, then Parliament can't set up an ad hoc committee to deal with every one of the 11 bodies to deal with the problems. Parliament, we have to tell Parliament that there are structures in being to deal with this issue. And one of the commissions for that was the labour relations legislation applies. Well, the labour relations legislation should not apply automatically to what is important for public service. So, Professor Melk, you can't help on this.
To a degree, Chair. I think I'm right in saying that there have been relatively few sessions. But in the first few years, because I, with Jaya Jose, were initially appointed, so we've been there since the beginning, although I had a break in the middle. But there was some uncertainty as to the role. And as soon as there is uncertainty, then tensions arise. But it wasn't any interpersonal conflict. It was simply professional. And then the meeting to which you referred earlier, where the roles were defined more clearly, was held by the Commission And that resolved that issue largely, where the deputy chair was made in charge of the research aspects predominantly. The chair, who was at that stage Murphy Morazzi, was then more the external relations and the overall running of the commission. So that resolution, which I think was about 1996, resolved and formed a structure which worked very well. There's some question now again about the possibility of redefining the deputy chair as well, but up to now it's worked, I think, very well.
We get a copy of that. The other issue which arises in our commission is sometimes the full-time staff believe that the commissioners, in this case particularly part-time commissioners, are interfering with the executive functions. Now, there has to be some resolution to that, because that's the problem that arises. Sometimes vice versa. The full-time staff believe that they have the authority to run, you know, like portfolio committee thing. They know more than the minister, but right, they don't know what runs. Sorry.
So that was a And I think we need to tighten that, because we cannot rely on one institutional memory trying to recall how we handled things in the past. Two, on the goodwill of the people sitting on the commission now, because people cannot always be the same. There could be serious tensions that need a kind of a mechanism that don't take into account.
Thank you very much. It's
about
14 now.
I asked myself whether there was a reason why these sections, proposed sections, were so over-legislated. For example, there's a whole thing that says exactly how the chairman must run a meeting. I don't know, what is going on here? Now, was it simply the overzealousness of the person who wrote it? But you see, it's relevant, and just set my mind at rest. I'm aware of other commissions where one of the problems is said to be the way the meetings are run of the relevant commission. So you're not trying to address that. We have got used in South Africa to setting everything out in statutes. And look, if we need that, then that's fine. You set it out point by point and everybody knows how stuff works. But that is not... give me an answer. I see it's shaking, but this was just the overzealousness of a person in management.
No, really, I think so. Something that should have been mentioned.
Yes.
Could I reiterate that there really haven't been interpersonal problems or problems around procedures in meetings, and those sort of issues have not plagued the commission at all.
Thank you very
A recent article assessed in one of the daily newspapers or weekly newspapers assessed the role of the FSC. And the argument, as I recall it, was we have the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act, we have a Municipal Finance Management Act, we have a PFMA, and we're more than a decade into a constitutional democracy. The pertinent question that was raised is, do we still need an FSC? What was your response to that?
That's the last question by those who are asked. But please, we are right in the middle of it. In the light of what Ms. Johnson has said, in the existence of all the structures, do we still need the FIC?
Sure, if I could venture an answer to that one. I think undoubtedly yes. Because if I could use an analogy, one doesn't throw away an umbrella because it's not raining today. This is basically an arbitrating body, whereas it only makes I'll pass you a qualifier. It only makes recommendations, but the nature of its recommendations are such that it must take into account the different interests of the parties, the levels of government. Because it's going well at the moment, one should not dismantle a structure as important as this. If one looks historically at intergovernmental relations in a country such as Canada and Australia, those ones that have had a much longer experience of similar types of issues. Yes, but there have been large swings, even within the existing legislation, to and from or greater degrees of federalism. And it's in those where tensions arise and where one does need an independent body to make recommendations, of course, as part of it. Now, if I may, actually, I think in the initial years of the new constitution and the FSC, the commission did play a very important role in getting the current structures with the former legislature into place. And the fact that there is a large degree of consensus as well is not a good reason for disbanding it.
Well, no, that's a legitimate question. If you may ask, if you wish to, when you're making a submission, but not 47 pages, by the way. Please, in modesty, you may wish to answer that in a systematic way and take up the point that Ms. Jones has made in the government, the Budget Council, the Cabinet Budget Committee. All these are countervailing. We're not presuming an answer on our part, obviously not, but we would like to buttress whatever arguments we put forward. So it's open to you, through the chair, of the milk. You've had a long memory in this, as to, in the light of that, what's the justification for their advice?
Right, Mr. Smuts, this goes on interest.
Mr. Smuts? Oh, sorry, is there any other question before we look at the last bit now? Sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Anyway,
if you have
any
Well, looking at the broader role of the Commission, that of giving impartial advice on sustainable public and fiscal systems, and also not only influencing a fiscal system, but also facilitating the long-term fiscal sustainability. Looking at that, and on the other hand, looking at those many municipalities out there who are unable to sustain themselves financially, and as a result thereof, are unable to offer basic services to the communities, for what role have you played, or to what extent have you given advice to such municipalities? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Before you get to Africa, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the our role, the Commission makes its recommendations and we report our recommendations to SALDA. So SALDA has been the, in terms of reaching the local government structure, SALDA has been the main conduit. And SALDA nominates two representatives from local government as commissioners. And those are being appointed by the president. So there is strong interaction at local government level. The other point to be precise is that the Municipal Finance Management Act and all legislation relating to that requires that the local government actually request the input of the commission before they engage on certain issues related to intergovernmental facilitation. So in that respect, when it comes to us, we deal with it and we make those recommendations to the local government. We also interact with the select with the portfolio committees and the select committees dealing with local government and in the different forms in the various provinces and in the NCOP.
I think just the point was quite more specific. SALGA is broad consultation. Mm-hmm. The question was, the specific problem in Schweizer-Renecker, are they able to turn to you for assistance? Hold on. And then secondly, Project Consolidate. What has been your role in this enormously important, expensive project called Project Consolidate? What have you, how were you asked to be involved?
Chair, we municipalities do come to us with specific requests. One particular example would be the whole area of the redemarcation of boundaries, because it has very specific implications for intergovernmental fiscal relations allocation, and the Commission has made a submission. We sometimes make supplementary submissions on that, and we submit and we discuss, and the researchers engage with this particular local government on that. On the issue of Project Consolidate, we have not been asked to comment, but we have been asked to participate in the discussions around that. I don't know, Bongani, you want to add a bit to that?
With respect to Project Consolidate, I'll say that the interaction has been very minimal between the Commission and primarily the initial discussions were between the Commission and the TPLG. And
Commission. What is Project Consolidate?
Project Consolidate is this one big program that the TPLG is coordinating, which is aimed at uplifting those municipalities that are very weak in terms of resources, both human resources and financial resources. So it basically aims at uplifting, improving skills and improving service delivery in municipalities. So there are a group of identified municipalities that are targeted under that project. So what I was saying is that there was initial discussions between the former commissioner Dr. Mukaza and the head of the Department of Provincial and Local Government along those methods, but the shift or the changing or the movement of the chairperson to the central bank then probably brought the break in that process.
Yeah. Again, this is a constitutional memory. I think it's a very important matter because we will look at this in our own report. Can I therefore thank you for that? It may not be a fiscal matter, a time project consolidated. But you largely involve fiscal matters, isn't that so? Mm-hmm. So to be fair, they may have given you opportunity. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On page 5 of the presentation, the Commission says that for some time now they have concentrated on tracking expenditure leakages, which may potentially result in service delivery failures. And they are hopeful, they say, that as a result of this expenditure tracking, they'll be better informed about progress on the achievement towards the Millennium Development Goals. Now, the Public Service Commission would be preoccupied with ensuring that there is efficient delivery of services across the board. And insofar as you said in your response that you do not have any formal relationship with other bodies, like, for instance, in this case, the Public Service Commission, do you not think that in light of what you said there, it becomes much more imperative for you to formalize that relationship because you see your role in that respect as ensuring that there is a delivery of services and that it is much more efficient, of course, from a fiscal perspective, but the Public Service Commission would then look at delivery of services from a much broader perspective. So I'd like your response on that one.
Can I ask for a repeat because I lost, you know, I was looking for the page.
Oh, I said it's page 5 of your presentation, 1-3rd paragraph, I think it is. Starting with some of the mechanisms, and if you go to an extra E, that line there, parliamentary, then you go to the next line there. If you're talking about tracking of expenditure leakages, I read the last line says, we are hopeful that as a result of this expenditure tracking, we will be better informed about progress on the achievements towards the MDGs. So my question is, to the extent that the Public Service Commission, in terms of Section 195 of the Constitution, would be interested in ensuring that services are delivered informed by those values and principles much more broadly. And yet, as far as you are concerned, from a fiscal perspective, you would like to ensure that there is value for money. And perhaps one may also invoke the Constitution. One of these principles says there must be an efficient, economic, and effective use of resources that must be promoted. So, and yet you said earlier that you do not necessarily have a very formal relationship with these bodies. In light of what you are saying here, do you not think that there's a need for you to develop that kind of formal relationship, because there certainly is an overlap there? I argue, but your response.
Yeah, I think I need to agree, because we have work in progress to actually consolidate our stakeholders, and you know, I think we'll do that.
That's
it.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is on page 19 of 47, conflict resolution. The Commission does not have any formal mechanism in place to deal with conflict between the among other commissioners. Chairperson, my question is that does each commission work in isolation? Aren't they accountable to somebody? Or when are they going to set a proper mechanism in respect of working in close cooperation with the other commission? Thank you.
I think this issue I raised, what it is, it's very prescriptive in the report. The Chief Executive has drawn up rules as to how the commissioners must behave. It's a larger question, that's why we're here. So we'll deal with the larger question now, when the conflict may arise, okay? But I think they respond to that. Now, in relation to conflict of interest, the disclosure of interest. Now, any other question? Besides this moth and jet return, you wish to raise a question, Mr. Scott? Hold on. Yeah, please.
I actually don't, except for one thing. Am I correct in thinking the Act does not address disclosure at the moment? And secondly, this seems to me quite a fair approach to it. If there is a lacuna, then it ought to be solved.
This is about disclosure as far as business interests, right? Financial interests are matter of focus. You can't attend it. What about general disclosure? Not about attending meetings. That's what I just want to say. General disclosure, financial interests of commissioners. And since all your staff, or nearly all staff, are fairly senior staff, what about general disclosure? It's not here. General disclosure, complete record of the business interests. But business interests are much greater than general disclosure. About, you see, public servants get gifts. So have you worked out your own protocol or act in the same? And because we ask this question of every commission. Sorry, we have to be quite honest. You have a general thing about not taking part in a debate and meeting for commission. Then you must disclose business interests. Presumably you must get officials prior permission from the chief executive. Am I right? For the officials. No.
No, so far, Chair, we just take declaration.
Declaration. Well, yeah. Now, the question that arises.
There is a human resource policy, comprehensive one, that actually deals with this budget. And I will make it available.
See, all that we have is a member of the commission. Membership of other commissions, business activities, involvement of others. As much, there's nothing here about the staff. You see? And then, where is the register kept?
Yeah, it kept in, yeah.
As I said, Chairperson, there is a document, basically that talks about all your concerns, and number two, I do keep the register, okay, on behalf of the Chairperson.
So you control the confessional box.
Yes, I do.
No confession now, basically. I think that we'll have to look at this, I would say. So, Commission will have to look at that. Because the point is that all public servants, this is a problem we discussed with the Public Service Commission also, is that, first of all, they must run up to date. Secondly, they must be accessible to someone or the other who has interaction. So there's a problem, there's no answer. I'm not giving an answer, I'm saying that you must consider that it should be accessible to the chief executive officer and to the commissioners, the staff. The staff. You might consider that. And of course, very important is the disclosure by the commissioners too. So there's a gap there. Interaction public.
I suggest we skip those full phrases, but I do so on the basis that it is not my view that a relationship with the general public was intended. And if I'm wrong, or if other commissioners differ, would they address that?
Yeah, I think we should keep our opinions. Yeah, the point is, the problem about this is overall this, is about what should be done. This is like paragraph 14. Not what is happening. You should do this. Should provide South Africans, communicate with everyone, employ a variety of needs. Because, you know, this has been drafted. Is there any contact with the public? So I'm not making a judgment, neither is Ms. Fuss making a judgment. Is there any contact with the public? Next question. If there is not, should there be any contact with the public? Thanks. Can you help me?
Because I know we have had, Chair, I think we have had some arguments in the Commission about actually that is at administrative level, actually on how to deal with this issue, because we are also trying not to be an advocate body, and there's always a fear that too much involvement at that level, we might end up becoming advocates. So you know, we are still very nimble about that.
How
The report claims that there are no clear guidelines for remuneration packages for office bearers. But I just would like to draw their attention, Chairperson, to section 219 of the Constitution. That requires an Act of Parliament to deal with a framework for the remuneration of all the commissioners in the Constitution and all of our judges and so forth. So in fact, you should fall under such a framework.
Yeah, thank you. That's observed more in the breach than the observance. Well, that is a very important element now in deliberations. Right? Yeah. But of course, it's very important that we should clarify this. Now, we asked for the salaries and emoluments, part time, full time. I haven't got it yet. Committee members haven't got it. Apologies. That's like used to be the old company reports, the old ones. No longer now. Concordance reports. So we would like to know now what is the. Because if you want market related salaries, as you asked for, and then we need to know, well, how are you being suborned by being paid too little?
Richard, that question comes to your desk.
There's a gap of 24 to 25, I think, in your reply. Yes.
can share that there are two levels to this matter. The one is a detailed one that deals with the actual figure, but the one is a principal one. And I think the principal one is that, as I've indicated much earlier, that discussions of remuneration are underway in the National Treasury. And I think in that, the Commission itself has been discussed the whole issue of market-related salaries and remuneration for commissioners. It deserves to be discussed. In terms of the exact and the detailed figures, I think our colleagues can give that. However, I need to say that at this stage, in terms of remuneration, especially for the executive, there are inadequacies that still need to be addressed with National Treasury.
Let me just give an example. We have had submissions to the one body, but the salary of the chief executive is much lower than XYZ ABC, which I will mention on the commission. For that, therefore, we have to, not that we want uniform salaries, that is clear. What we want to look at is how our salary is used. And there's enormous variation. I think 11 commission, 11 different variations. Right? So we don't know how they're fixed. We know that they're not fixed. They're not fixed. Secondly, what are the salaries? So that we can compare life with life and life unlike. Because quite clearly, a body that simply exists in one level to receive complaints is very different from a body that effectively has a policy formulation. We make recommendations on policy recommendations. So that's Mickey Mouse society. We have minor level interventions. So can we have the salaries?
Yes.
And the emoluments of the part-time person.
I can't locate it, but you have seconded staff from the public service. Is that not the case?
No, we are allowed to.
Chair, according to current arrangements, the chairperson should be remunerated at the DDG level, and the deputy chair at the chief director level, and the commissioners, I can't remember the sitting allowance because all the other commissioners are part time. I can't remember the exact figure. I'm not sure if I have it on that one. However, in the current case, because the chairperson had been, when he was brought in, he had been serving at another institution. He was brought in at that salary level equivalent to that of the DG. So that creates a gap already between the chair and the deputy chair, but that I would call it's a personal scale for the chairperson. The arrangement should be.
Would you find that personal scale?
Maybe personal becomes very technical. But the question that I was director general in the free stage.
I just want to know about the formalities. That's
all. Right. No, it was my appeal to the minister.
Thank you. Now, what we're going to do apart from the other one is this question. Preparation. Jesus is to bring us from the road, because again,
what actually happens is that there's a tax that is issued by Treasury on an annual basis, revised on an annual basis as to the remuneration of the commission for taking for preparation and that type of thing. We use that scale.
This is for part-time.
Can you supply us that? Because you see, we learn a great deal about this, as one commissioner said. I think we should be sitting permanently for the next 10 years dealing with these issues. And of course, it's very important that the know these so that it removes a lot of problems with other commissioners.
Can I just add on this issue of salary? That, in fact, our salary, even annual, even inflation adjustment, always 0.5% whatever, they have to be determined by the president. So we always wait forever. Until the president says, okay, you can get your 5%. Whatever. And it's not the president's fault. It's just that the processes to him tend to be a little longer.
And fires of this way. This is not artificiality of legislation. Sounds very nice that the president has fixed that. Artificiality of it comes to a process where the president has nothing to do with it. Unless it's a gross injustice. Or you're very good at lobbying.
I
have that. All right. So, of course, we have to look at this carefully. That's why we are doing it. Yes,
Professor Murray. Very good. Chair, if I could just make a quick comment on that. I was trying to find the exact spot where this is mentioned. I can't put my finger on it. But because of that, it may have been in some earlier version of the Constitution, but because of this prescription that goes through the President's office, Channels have been channeled through the Ministry of Finance, through the Minister of Finance, but from the beginning it caused confusion, and our salaries have never been dealt with in terms of Section 219 that this budget refers to, because it went through this process, Department of Finance, and then us. And it has always created difficulties, and it's never been satisfactorily resolved.
Yeah.
But for the part-time commissioners, of course, that's not an issue. But for the permanent commissioners, the full-time commissioners, it's a serious problem.
As I very far away from the Mr. Lee has said, we want to remove tension between the two senior people, commissioners. Here there's a big divergence. As long as they get the same kind of carpet in their rooms and the same house. Our commissioners are members of the committee. We'd love to be called commissioners. Members of what a committee? Commissioners. Members of the committee, we're coming now to the tail end of our deliberations. Have you any outstanding questions? Yes, Mr. Thank
you, Chairperson. On the graph on page 44, you have got the key responsibilities. You have shown the key responsibilities in relation to the total expenditure. Could we get a breakdown of what these key responsibilities or the key performance areas are in relation to the expenditure? Because it seems there is an equal increase of both responsibilities and expenditure, which is quite acceptable, but if you could just get the breakdown of what these are. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I can forward the breakdown of it, but what is the national key? The key responsibility, it looks at the core business functions of the Commission. One of those core business functions is the Commission Research, which is also included on that key responsibility. We also look at areas of where there's a lot of traveling that the research people are doing to different provinces and municipalities. It's also part of those key responsibilities. And also, as you're aware, we are a human resource-based institution. Most of our core business function goes also to salaries. It also includes this. And then the total expenditure, just reflects the total expenditure that we incur at that particular year, in terms of what we see in terms of the core business function, how much the percentage in terms of the total expenditure. For example, if you look in 2006, the total expenditure was 19 million. The core business function expenses were 10 million, which consumed 56% of the total budget, which the other 44% is for the operational running cost of the commission.
Okay.
Sorry, being a lawyer, I'm not good with income statements. necessary. Why, in 2004, that financial year, why is there a loss reflected on the income statement? And what would cause a loss of that magnitude for a commission like yourself?
As you are aware that if we look at the trend of the commission budget from 2001 up to 2005, you see in terms of we have been having some level of surplus that we have. But on that particular year where we incur a loss, there were various reasons. One of the budget pressure that we had from various reports, there was also the chance and the side that we had to incur the cost for. But some of those costs where we had some negotiation with the National Treasury to get some adjustments. That's why the following year we get some adjusted budget on our budget. That is also reflected on our income statement.
Yeah, you must be careful.
We're not micromanaging. Mm-hmm. All the questions are asking about efficiency. Because it must be very, very careful. Your independence can be affected if somebody else, even this committee, tries to micromanage you. Please remember that. So we're not doing that. Just as a policy matter, from 2002, it's gone up to 21 million in 2006. That's an extraordinary increase, 9 million. Obviously, you get what you ask for, but can I ask, what have you used this remarkable 9 million increase in the space of 3 years? Far beyond inflation, what project, what do you review? Remember you said you had a review of your strategic plan. How will the 9 million be used? Without micromanaging, this is a part of our term of reference.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The 9 million difference has been used on the core business function of the FFC. And one area that we have been having a problem with, the chapter team has highlighted earlier on, was to keep the key research people and to solve those resources, especially the human resources that we needed for the FFC. And also, if you look at our financial statement, you'll see the money that we also use for consultants is far less than what it is on the total budget. It amounts to a small even less than 1%. Most of the money that we use is on the internal resources that we wanted to capacitate our commission with regard to that. And we did submit a motivation to Treasury where they've agreed to make that increase in the past few years.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I'm referring to a document that's not among documents that we've been provided with, but the Commission itself is very familiar with it. It's the submission for the Division of Revenue Changes 17-8, but nonetheless remains very relevant. On page 30, a review of local government equitable share formula. On page 31, they are referring to the constitutionally mandated basic services, and that refers to water, electricity, etc. And they contend in this document that the 130 rand figure used in estimating basic services is low. And they have indicated that they've engaged with the Department of Provincial and Local Governments and, of course, various other departments. Is it their view, perhaps, that their recommendations, particularly insofar as these services impact on the poorest of the poor, indigent households, etc., are being taken seriously because whatever government has committed itself to in ensuring that free basic services and whatever else are in fact enjoyed by the people will remain hollow unless these things are taken into account. Their response to this.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we are waiting treasuries and government's response on that, and we are waiting with bated breath because in the annexure E of the budget review, the response from treasury and from government will appear. But we at this stage cannot say how that will be responded to. But in our discussions and just general idea from the Budget Council, it is clear that there is a concern that that figure, that currently there is on the low side.
What is space? But when you have that cost of benefit thing, constitutionally mandated expenditure, which has to be seen in relation to overall government policy about expenditure in general. Right? So that, in fact, this is one element only in the policy formulation when it comes to the budget. You'll agree with that. Okay. So it won't be too hard if the cost of norms thing wasn't make sense about it.
Thank you. I've been very intrigued by some of what I've read, and I came to the FSC with no prior knowledge of your activities or your nature. One of the things that impressed me most, and I'm too curious, I just have to ask you. I read that at your 10th anniversary celebration, 2004, you or one of your program managers pointed out on an analysis of the state budget that spend on infrastructure had dropped from close to 27% to 20%. And it pointed out, you can't have economic growth without infrastructure. And it obviously increases now, and I must ask you this. Was he talking about road transport? Was he talking about electricity? Because now the lights have put underground. It seems to me you do very good work. And I just cannot resist asking whether that comment pertains to which infrastructure.
Very private view, by the way. A member of the committee. No, very private view of the committee. The committee has no views at all. Right?
Thank you, Chair. In fact, infrastructure financing is one of the key areas that the commission is involved in, and we developed a capital expenditure model to be able to allocate infrastructure expenditure. One of the key recommendations that the commission did make earlier on in 2002, I think it was, was that we have a special infrastructure grant, a special conditional grant for backlogs, and the Minister of Finance and government accepted that, and that money was allocated. When we focus on infrastructure, we estimate what we call capital stocks, public sector capital stocks. And our view at that time in 2004 was that the estimate of public sector capital stocks was pretty low. And we then argued that there should be some equitable allocation to boost the capital stocks for public sector to be able to ensure not only the economic concerns, but also the issues of access to services, roads, water, sanitation, social sector infrastructure like education, health, and then local government infrastructure. So I think in that sense we were quite specific, but there is a document out with the model that develops, and I'm sure we can get to you. We did circulate it. With respect to the chairperson, honorable chairperson's comment, the FSC's view is that you need to highlight when you cost the services. We don't just cost the norms, but we cost the functions. In other words, we find what is the optimal level of service that may be achieved with a particular outcome for a given amount of money. So the idea is not so much the costing and norm, but to find out the most efficient way and that you can cost a particular service given the limitations. Because Chapter 30 of the Constitution does put limitations on what funds are available. It says there is a given amount of funds available that is collected nationally. How can this be most efficiently spent? The big problem is not so much the amount of money, it's how the services are efficiently being delivered.
Thank you.
And Mr. Masuda?
Thank you. It's a view that the notion of an equitable share formula, which entitled, if I understand correctly, provinces to 80% of the nationally collected revenue as of rights, constitutional rights, has the effect that whereas national consensus regarding delivery of particular services, provinces and the provincial treasuries by and large enjoy some degree of leverage in determining how the funds are actually spent and the shifting of funds between different functions.
And I'm raising this because, especially in the area of social services, it's been difficult for us as portfolio committees to hold national departments accountable for delivery of services which are delivered at provincial level, because the national department does not have control over the spending that happens in the province. What is your relationship to this issue? Does it in any way impact on your work, on your role, and how have you been able to relate or to deal with this particular question?
Thank you.
Chairperson, can I just respond? In fact, last year, our recommendation touched specifically on that issue, the tension between the Constitution requires the provinces to have a discretion in terms of the equitable share and how they spend it. But of course, national departments have a specific view that these norms have to be attained at a particular level. But in terms of the Constitution, progressively realized. But we did publish a series of research reports last year looking at the problems with conditional grants. Because you can't make, if provinces allow discretion, you can't make everything conditional. You've got to allow them the leeway to make those decisions and so on. And if you, that document is available, and I think we can make it available to you so that you can read in terms of the issue. But the Commission's view is that it's prescribed, provinces have some discretion, local governments have discretion, and nationals have discretion. So at which level you make something conditional, and at which level you allow the discretion to operate.
Well, I think it's a big issue, my colleague says, so I would like to, but does that then suggest that we are effectively, at least at the level of fiscal relations, operating in a federal, mode, maybe we need to that, acknowledging that reality, that even though we are a unitary state, which is where it comes to fiscal relations, we by and large operating as a dispensation of fiscal federal
hybrid.
In any case, it's only enough that not all functions actually have forms that.
Thank you, Chair. Very quickly, part of the institutional memory is that when this thing was being discussed in the very early days, the use of the F word was considered very no-no. So this is why when the legislation was developed, they introduced the notion of intergovernmental fiscal relations. And within the context of the Act, many of those things are discussed. And there are many principles which are there in the history, which are there in the National Treasury and Ministry of Finance. But my feeling personally as a public finance person, it does not matter how many spheres you have, you will always require some intergovernmental allocations on an equitable basis, because for me the issue is the Constitution. The Constitution says the Bill of Rights guarantees constitutional mandates of basic services. Chapter 13 says there are limits to how this can be achieved, and you need to take those into account. So whichever way you look at this, a given pot of money, but they have to be allocated equitably, and they have to be allocated objectively. And this is why we've been taking a formulated approach to it. Yes?
But the difficulty is not so much the allocation, in my view. The difficulty is whether we are, as a collective as a country, able to ensure that there is, I wouldn't say equal access across provinces to basic services, but an equitable dispensation where, irrespective of where you are in the country, you are able to access that which can be accessed elsewhere. Well, certainly in the case of social grants, I think that the notion costed not
compulsion, but where legislation requires, then you have actually to deliver irrespective of your constraints. In relation to those areas where there isn't such compulsion, and yet there's an overall constitutional obligation to honor socioeconomic crisis, how are you advising in those situations?
The only constitutional norm which obliges a state to provide is right to basic education and others. That's the only norm that says you have to. Every other depends on available resources. That's right of access. Right? So you can't say constitutionally ordained norms. The only one, which is, in fact, I would have encouraged someone to take me to court, is the right to basic education. And has enormous problems satisfying the mandarins in finance, but in fact it was a preventive, automatic law. And that is why you have this anti-poverty rollout now. Others are matters of available resources. So, and I think this is why your role is very important. You're not independent in that sense, because you're part of the machinery of governance in the broader sense, right? Like the judiciary or anybody else. That's the machinery of governance in political science terms, right? But you're independent in the sense that you bring to bear something beyond simply at the Department of the Treasury and their own internal logic and internal positions. I would like you, of course, to be more publicly engaged in your proposals. That's a different matter, which we will look at when I have the report. My personal view is that there's no harm in public engagement within the constraints that the situation mentioned, but you're not, in fact, having a debate about the government as to what the budget should be. That's a different matter. But the availability of this commission for small municipalities, assistance given. Because in the end, in a developmental state, boundaries and territories are irrelevant. If you have to go by modern curve, then you're living in a normal state, which is settled. And look at the settled states of that in various parts of the world. So the boundaries and all should be creatively looked at, dynamically looked at, as long as, in fact, there is no clear transgression of law. If there are no further questions, may I thank the chairperson, Chief Executive Deputy, members of the Commission, the staff who are here. It must have been some kind of cultural experience for you to go through this. I don't think any portfolio committee has gone through the same degree of precision and possibly detail as we've done, but it's all meant to strengthen for chapter 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 Commission, and then to come to conclusions about how effective your work is. Now, thank you very much. We will look forward to a couple of documents. As for the revision of the document, that's up to the Commission itself. You've clarified lots of matters. And don't waste your time, but we do want some details. And some of the documents that you said exist already, which we'd like to get. Now, next week, of course, on Friday, we don't have a session because we have the troops marching outside. On Wednesday, we have Mr. Simmons and Ms. Johnson on part of the committee. I just want to tell you in advance, because in case you don't know, Advent Masuta will supply you with a document again, which talks about the distribution of functions among the committee. And we have, therefore, Wednesday, the public projector. In the meantime, thank you very much once again. There is a kind of parliamentary lunch available. I adjourn the meeting. We do have.